On This Week in Enterprise Tech, remote work is at an all-time high, but the question you should be asking your security officer is, are your employees practicing good habits from home? We'll get into that discussion. Plus, identity and access management is a challenge, especially with so many options out there. Brian, Heather, and I talk with Bruce Esposito. He's the Global Identity and Access Manager Strategist at One Identity. We talk about the potential for a single identity to rule them all. You shouldn't miss it. Twyatt on the set. This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you from LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 415, recorded October 16th, 2020, Digital Identity Crisis. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Melissa. Like expired milk, 30% of your customers' data goes bad every year. That's money down the drain. Visit Melissa's developer portal for free access to data quality APIs, demos, and code samples. Freshen up your sour data today with 1,000 records clean for free at melissa.com/twit. And by Barracuda. One of Barracuda's premier customers is PetSmart, which used Barracuda and Microsoft's help to quickly secure their remote business during the pandemic. Check out Barracuda's webinar on October 20th to learn how at barracuda.com/PetSmart. And by LastPass. LastPass can help you manage identities and promote good security behaviors while your employees are remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. Welcome to Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide to this big, giant world of the enterprise. But what better way to go on this journey? But bring in the top industry experts to guide us, starting with our very own Miss Heather Williams. She's the network solutions analyst over at Ruckus Networks and the queen of Wi-Fi. Mo, it's great to have you back. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I hunkered out here at the little old lake in the East Texas. So thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. Now, what have you been up to lately? You've been still sheltering in place, I think.
Mostly. See, I've put my husband in this gerbil ball, and so I'm mostly just keeping him under wraps. But we're barbecuing and smoking and just staying out here. All of my conferences have gone virtual, so it's been a little bit weird. But just still, I mean, incredibly busy. I'll tell you more about that later on, but just lots of stuff going on.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for being here. Well, speaking of busy, he's our geek in paradise, and he's also a network architect over at Sky Fiber, Mr. Brian Chi. Chibert, how are you, my friend? What's keeping you busy?
I'm good. I actually had a very, very unique experience the other day. I got to walk around doing an RF survey in Iolani Palace, the only royal palace on U.S. soil. That was a truly unique experience. You know, my wife Kathy has a picture of me with my laptop open in Spectrum Analyzer behind the thrones.
Very cool. Now, can you give us the consensus? How was their Wi-Fi?
Oh, the Wi-Fi is horrible. my partner and I are basically going back, and we're going to redo the survey, but at 5.8 gigahertz this time. All their stuff's been at 2.4, and there's a ton of interference because they're so close to the downtown financial district.
Very cool, very cool. Well, folks, it's been a busy week in the enterprise, so we should get started. Now, remote work is at an all-time high, but the question you should be asking your security officers is, are your employees practicing good habits at home? Well, we'll get into what that means. And I bet you've used identity or even a digital identity to even pull down this podcast. Have you ever thought about how many different ones you're actually using? Do you trust them? Well, today we have Bruce Esposito. He's the Global Identity and Access Management Strategist at One Identity. Talk about the potential for a single identity to rule them all. Think about that one. But before we get into all that, let's go ahead and jump into this week's blips. Now, we all have been succumbed to retail therapy at one point or another, right? Well, Amazon Prime Day is another day that retail universe has created for us to let down our guard and buy something that we want. Well, that's not the only thing that's manifested during those deal days. The cyber world has also found a good day to perform cyber attacks as well. Now, the research firm Bolster analyzed hundreds of millions of web pages and tracked many new phishing and fraudulent sites using the Amazon brand and logo. This most significant increase in the sites in these types of sites since the COVID-19 pandemic started, which forced people indoors in March. Now, according to the firm, the massive spike in phishing and fraudulent sites in September is a strong indication that cyber criminals are actively trying to profit from Prime Day frenzy. Now, shoppers need to stay alert to avoid giving up their personal information or buying products on fraudulent sites for things that they will never receive. Now, the best way that shoppers can protect themselves is by understanding how to discern safe, secure activity from warning signs that sites are fraudulent. Now, Amazon Prime Days represents a unique opportunity for cyber criminals because there will be a massive focus on special deals. Now, people may be scrambling to get a special discount or something, which opens to the door to them overlooking some common suspicious activity. Another consideration is the Amazon security teams will likely be on high alert for fraudulent activity. Now, their focus could overshadow some other standard areas of focus, leaving a blind spot for less covert tactics against Amazon directly. Now, specifically, malvertising or links from Amazon deals lead to malware or phishing attempts offering early access or special discounts. Now, since the start of the pandemic, there has been almost a 37% increase in mobile phishing attempts here. Now, most of these attempts were directly tied to COVID by posing as relief funds, medical updates, or entertainment for life in isolation. So how can users protect themselves, their data, and their money during this time? While social engineering remains a standard method for attackers, humans are often the weakest link in the security chain. Proper training and employing services that test human exposure to social engineering attacks, such as phishing, can help prevent some from being the next victim. Always think before you click, of course. Take a moment to ask yourself how this link and how this actually looks like a real email or not. And those are the first things that really should set off warning signals if there's been an embedded link or potentially even an attachment. Now, protect yourself from mobile phishing attacks. You should never tap a link from a number or a person you don't actually recognize, obviously. And if you do tap one of those links, read the full URL in the browser. So make sure you recognize it. Now, to add more bit context here, Verizon's 2020 data breach investigation report found that vulnerable web applications are the leading cause of retail breaches. More broadly, Amazon Prime Day and upcoming holiday season should serve as a reminder that all e-commerce brands should prioritize their security of their apps and software to create a safe online shopping experience for all customers.
Well, if you live in an area where AT&T is taking government funds in exchange for deploying broadband, there's a chance you won't be able to get the service, even if AT&T initially tells you it's available. AT&T's Mississippi division has received over $283 million from the Federal Communications Connect America Fund since 2015, and in exchange is required to extend home internet service to over 133,000 potential customer locations. As previously reported, the Mississippi Public Service Commission accused AT&T of submitting false coverage data to the FCC program. As evidence, Mississippi says its investigation found concrete, specific examples that show AT&T Mississippi has reported location addresses as being served when in fact the addresses are without service. AT&T has since provided an explanation that confirms it submitted false data on the serviceability of some addresses, but says it will still meet the overall requirement. So the deal was, they're saying they wanted to post corrections, but they're saying the FCC site doesn't have a way for them to mass submit changes. And that's the excuse there. I want to say lame, but I've seen a lot of bad sites that don't do that. Anyway, the whole deal is CAF money, which is called Connect America Fund, is supposed to be directed so that rural America, people like Mo, can get connected. You know, for the longest time, poor Mo had to use an LTE modem. Well, this is really, really common. especially during the pandemic, a lot of people are connecting up via the hotspot on their phone. And there's a ton of Connect America Fund money available. And for some reason or another, it's going mostly to the big vendors. So one of the things that I spoke to Claude Aiken of the Wispapalooza organization is that what's going on? Why is it so hard for smaller internet service providers like WIS to get access to this CAF money? And the answer is it's really, really hard. So there's actually a whole track at Wispapalooza just teaching WIS how to do the paperwork to apply for CAF money. Anyway, it needs to change. And I would, again, recommend you email your Congress critters and say, hey, what's going on? Why is my CAF money being only going to the big boys and they're not doing a darn thing about it? You want to go and see other people. You want maybe some competition. End soapbox.
Thank you, Cheebert. I feel so seen. Not only did poor Mo have to use LTE, she had to use satellite. Risky barbecue. Out here in Texas, we take our barbecue seriously. So yesterday's ZDN article about a credit card data breach involving Dickey's Barbecue Pit, the largest barbecue chain restaurant in the U.S., got my attention. The good news is that only three of Texas's 123 Dickey's locations were affected. The bad news is that card details of more than 3 million Dickey's customers were compromised. According to Gemini Advisory, a cybersecurity firm that tracks financial fraud and who discovered this breach, the details were posted this week on a carding and fraud marketplace known as Joker's Stash. Cybercriminals on that site began advertising the collection as Blazing Sun. The source of the compromise appears to be the in-store point-of-sale system used at 156 of Dickey's 469 locations, with the compromised restaurants located across 30 states, and with the highest exposure being in California and Arizona. The collection window was between July 2019 and August 2020. In a report posted by Gemini, researchers warn that Joker's Stash is likely to continue adding new records over the next several months. While cardholders who make a timely report about unauthorized charges generally are not responsible for those charges, it's not clear if the affected restaurants were using outdated terminals or if the EMV terminals were misconfigured. Either of these possibilities may hold serious liability for Dickey's, and as the Gemini report concludes, this represents a broader challenge for the industry, and Dickey's may become the latest cautionary tale of legal woes, adding to financial damage from cybersecurity attacks.
Now, creating safe and online shopping experiences for customers is important. Now, that's what my theme of my first blip was. Well, that may be hard when e-commerce platforms have a bunch of vulnerabilities in them. Now, specifically, the Magento platform by Adobe. Now, Adobe bolsters its platform to handle over $100 billion in gross merchandise volume every year. Well, if the platform leaks data like Niagara Falls, does that mean it's still good? Published on October 15th, a security advisory outside the firm's typical monthly patch cycle called out 9 new vulnerabilities, now 8 of which are considered either critical or essential, as well as 1 moderate severity flaw. Now, the vulnerabilities impact Magento Commerce and Magento Open Source versions 2.35 and 2.40 and earlier. Now, to name a few of the flaws, there's a file upload flaw that allows a list bypass flaw that actually has a SQL injection bug as well. And this can lead to the execution of arbitrary code or arbitrary read-write database access. Now, a stored cross-site scripting issue and a user session invalidation bug causes a security flaw that allows Magento CMS pages to be modified without permission. Yikes, that's not good. Now, luckily, these have been patched before the holiday season, but this also has me wondering what other kinds of issues are lurking in such platforms behind the scenes. Now, for now, just follow our weekly TWiET guidance for all your security needs. Stay on top of your patches.
So, and this is a story that's probably very near and dear to Mo's heart. In fact, just before the show, she was telling me that Ruckus was involved in one of the original versions of this project. Story goes, A remote tribe in Washington State is one of the first users of SpaceX's Starlink broadband, having been connected recently after years of struggling to get a modern internet service. Quote, "We're very remote," said Melvin John Ashue, vice chairman of the Ho Tribe's governing committee. Quote, "The last 8 years, I felt like we've been paddling upriver with a spoon and almost getting nowhere with getting internet to the reservation." The Ho Tribe's reservation is in western Washington and has a population of 28 households with 116 people in the 2010 U.S. Census. Ashue described the tribe's internet problems and use of Starlink in a video produced by the Washington State Department of Commerce. The video serves partly to advertise the state's agency's effort to get everybody connected to modern broadband by 2024, a goal that has been helped along by SpaceX's division to start its limited Starlink beta in Washington State. Previously, the article wrote about how Washington State emergency responders were using Starlink in areas ravaged by wildfires. Residents of the wildfire-stricken town of Malden have also been using Starlink. Quote, "The Ho Tribe called us early on in COVID, sharing that they had a lot of challenges around being connected or staying connected," said Russ Elliott, director of the Washington State Broadband Office. "They definitely had limited internet and they were nervous about the future." Well, one of the more intense conversations I have had while at Miss Palooza was with the folks in Canada and remote Alaska about difficulties getting CAF money from the FCC and just how expensive it is to deliver broadband in through trees, hilly and mountainous areas, and even getting backhaul. So things have to change, folks. Call and email your Congress critters.
And if they won't answer, elect new ones. The rise and return of Imhotep. As the saying goes, what was old becomes new again. When the malware known as Imhotep was first discovered in 2014, it functioned primarily to steal banking credentials. The U.S. Computer Emergency Readiness Team describes Imhotep as an advanced modular banking Trojan and that it is among the most costly and destructive malware for both public and private organizations. It has been one of the top and most versatile internet threats for the last 5 years. A few years ago, Imhotep operators evolved it to create a botnet that they now sell access to in a malware as a service model. The email campaigns themselves have grown in sophistication over the last few years, and the operators regularly evolve the phishing campaigns, including a recent spam run that quotes from past emails the recipient has sent or received and addresses the recipient by name. This past February, which I know feels like a decade ago, James Quinn, a researcher with Binary Defense, identified a new attack vector in which an infected machine can attempt to spread into other networks across the Wi-Fi, even if the infected machine is not on that Wi-Fi network. Shortly after this, Imhotep went dark, only to reappear this summer. And this week, the Department of Homeland Security said that Imhotep has emerged as, quote, one of the most prevalent ongoing threats, as it increasingly targets state and local governments and infects them with other malware, including ransomware. Over the last month, Imhotep has successfully burrowed into Quebec's Department of Justice and increased its onslaught on governments in France, Japan, and New Zealand. And it has also targeted the Democratic National Committee and U.S. state and local governments. This is one phishing story that isn't just a tall tale.
You probably use SonicWall appliances on your network. I know I do right now, and I love it. Now, SonicWall NSAs are used as firewalls and SSL VPN portals to filter, control, and allow employees to access internal private networks. Unfortunately, Tripwire researchers say that SonicOS contains a bug in a component that handles custom protocols. Now, the component is exposed on the WAN and actually means that any attacker can exploit it as long as they are aware of the device's IP address. Now, Tripwire says exploiting the bug is trivial even for unskilled attackers. In its simplest form, the bug can cause a denial of service attack and a crash on the device, but a code execution exploit is likely feasible. Now, the question is, how prevalent is this vulnerability? Well, it's estimated that almost 800,000 internet-accessible SonicWall VPN appliances will need to be updated and patched for this significant vulnerability. Now, CVE-2020-5135 is considered a critical bug with a rating of 9.4 out of 10, and is expected to come under active exploitation once proof of concept code is made publicly available. Now, exploiting the vulnerability doesn't require the attacker to have valid credentials at the bug manifests and as the bug manifests before any authentication operations. Now, the bug is also SonicWall's second major bug this year, after another one being disclosed earlier this winter. Now, as the holiday season approaches and your workforce is at its remote highs, make sure to patch before you dispatch. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the bites. But before we get to the bites, we have to thank a really great sponsor of this week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Melissa. Now, have you forgotten to check the date on a carton of milk? I know I have, and it's easy to store it away and just forget about it. And like milk, your customer data can also go bad, sometimes even faster than milk. Well, to put it in perspective, up to 30% of customer data goes bad each and every year. Now, think about the customer base that you have. That's a lot of customers. Now, that's when Melissa is there for you. Melissa makes sure your data is accurate, current, so you can reach each person, each customer, the right people at the right time. You did the work to make them customers. Melissa makes so you can actually have reliable customer data. Now, if you're wondering how effective Melissa is, just know that they've been helping businesses maintain fresh data for 35 years. Now, Melissa can help you identify your customers and get to know them. Think about how valuable it could be if your organization could actually maybe add consumer demographic information to your records, such as property and mortgage data, even marital status and social media handles. Melissa will fill in the gaps by adding email and phone numbers. Plus, if you're looking for new customer leads, Melissa can help here as well, because identifying current customers allows you to find new prospective customers to Melissa's prospect database. Now, all of you know I'm the API guy and I live and breathe them every day, and I use Melissa's APIs, and they really are easy to get the data you need on your customers when you need it. Now, verify your addresses, emails, phone numbers, and names in real time. Incorrect data entered by customers, simple human error, or duplicated records makes it easy for bad data to find its way into your systems. Melissa can help you verify your data at the point of entry. Match and consolidate your records. Melissa's matching and duplication tools help you uncover, merge, and purge hard-to-find duplicate records for an accurate 360-degree view of your customers. Now, Melissa's flexible deployment options offer different platforms to suit any preference, business size, or budget. With flexible on-premise web service, secure FTP processing, and software as a service delivery options, you can choose the best way to meet your unique business needs. Now, Melissa continuously undergoes independent security audits to reinforce their commitment to data security, privacy, and compliance requirements. They have the utmost dedication to your data security by implementing strong controls and safeguards when processing your data. I probably told you the story already, but I think that maybe even the USPS might need Melissa here, because I put in a request recently to put in a redelivery by entering my name and address, and it auto-resolved to the wrong address. It wasn't my address. It was a unit down the street. Mind you, I've lived here for 10 years. Now, if they had Melissa, they could have been able to instantly verify and determine the right address. Now, over 10,000 businesses trust the address experts. Trust Melissa to be your foundation for data driven success. Melissa is supporting communities and qualifying essential workers during COVID-19. See if your organization qualifies for 6 months of free service by applying online now. Don't put up with sour customer contact data. Try Melissa's APIs in the developer portal. It's easy to log on, sign up, and start playing in the API sandbox 24/7. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. That's melissa.com/twit. And we thank Melissa for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the bites. Now, even if you can't see your employees in the offices, they still need to be reminded that criminals are always trying to spot a weak link in the chain. Now, when the world shifted to working from home, criminals pounced, right? They jumped on it. Never wanting to miss a chance to capitalize on people in the time of weakness, they stepped up the phishing attacks. Now, they also created fake COVID-19 information sites and spoofed government health sites to access potentially valuable account information. Now, while those types of attacks and scams have been around for years, people have been more exposed these last few months. Now, with schools closed, students have switched to online learning programs and video calls as well. Now, parents find themselves sharing their work laptops with kids to do their schoolwork or join virtual classes. Suddenly, families and personal accounts for Facebook, Nintendo, Xbox, and Netflix are right alongside office tools like Teams, Microsoft Office, and corporate email clients. Luckily, personally, I have separate devices for my kiddos, but not everyone is as fortunate. In some cases, parents have used their work email to create new accounts for their children. They may even reuse some of the passwords and shared credentials with the family. Now, it's easy to imagine parents letting their kids use maybe even the company Zoom credentials for school calls. Then someone goes and reuses that same login to create maybe even like a Fortnite account or something. Now, although security experts recommend using unique passwords for each account, most people's prevailing practice is to reuse passwords across multiple sites. It's easier, right? Well, in fact, SkyCloud's report on password reuse among Fortune 1000 companies or employees found that 76.5% have reused the same password paired with their corporate email on more than one breached account. Now, with the shift to e-commerce likely permanent, along with the continued acceptance and prevalence of remote work, the consequences of those reused and shared logins have staying power. Now, criminals just love this. They suppose a login and password is ever stolen in data breach. In that case, the information will eventually end up circulating on the dark web marketplace where bad actors can buy them and sell them. And those breached credentials are then available to criminals for credential stuffing, where they actually are tested against other sites to see which digital counts they can take over. Now, some criminals can even test the common password variations, like changing the individual letters to numbers, like password versus pass at with the at symbol in it, password with the at symbol in it, or even adding numbers or symbols to the end. Now, if a password has been exposed to data breaches and another account with a variation of the same password is at risk too. Now, at work, the company can monitor corporate credentials for breach exposures to keep attackers locked out of the work accounts. Still, when employees reuse exposed passwords across personal logins, they can create a dangerous blind spot for corporate security teams. Now, this is where security awareness education steps in. It needs to be a constant reminder here. Share relatable scenarios to teach the dangers of reusing passwords. The need for smart and safe online habits is also needed to be reminded. Now, it may be a while before you are back in the office or things are reopened, which means the threats from intermingling personal and professional account credentials will continue on and on. And even after starting to go back to the office, criminals will be lurking, waiting to exploit other bad habits. Now, security leaders can stay vigilant here. Even if they can't see your employees in the office, you need to tell them that the criminals are always trying to find the weakest link in the chain. Now, I want to bring in Chibert here first, because Chibert, you're talking about this all the time. Our users are the weakest link, right? Do you have maybe some things our audience can do here to make this better for themselves, maybe?
Well, one thing, big change in my life. LastPass is a sponsor. Let's get that out of the way. But it's a really darn good product. And one of the things that I do now that has made a significant change is that I go and use Hawaiian words, or my other favorite is you start using the first letters of, say, the first 10, 15 words in your favorite song. Right. That's some pretty strong passwords. Now, when you're using a password vault, and you can, you know, LastPass is my example, I went from being able to remember, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 character passwords. You know, I got to stretch a little bit. I'm getting older. Now, with a password vault where I can randomly generate strong passwords, I'm now going out to 16 to 20. In some cases, I'm going out to 25 character passwords. And that has been actually quite liberating. You know, everybody tends to do our favorite password, the kids' names, their birth dates, or something like that. And that's just not going to cut it in this day and age. So my big suggestion is, yes, users are the weakest link. Use a password vault. It doesn't necessarily have to be LastPass. I'm just suggesting because they're a sponsor. I use it. And the individual version of LastPass, where it's on a single device, is still free. So use it. Generate random passwords. I actually pay for the premium version. I think it's called premium version, where it actually synchronizes across my tablet, my phone, my web, and my computer. It's been great. And now that Mo's back, sadly her internet service provider managed to dump her. Oh. I guess
see,
it's time
my
to
wisp
go.
needs some more calf funding, obviously.
Yeah, so. I guess so.
Periodically, we have some hiccups. We are out here in the middle of nowhere. I think I've told you guys more than once that there's no fiber within three counties of here that doesn't involve oatmeal. So I'm just happy when the zeros and ones flow.
Well, we're glad you're back. Maybe we could. I do want to ask you the same question here. I think, like, what are organizations? Now, Cheever talked a little bit about password managers, like LastPass, who is a sponsor, but we love using LastPass. But how do organizations make this better? How can they force their users? What can they do to make this better here? Like, there's got to be something.
Yeah, and I actually have a couple of thoughts. And I'm, by the way, I am one of those people who has an unnamed coworker who, because of a shared Zoom account and device with his teenage son, accidentally signed in to a partner event with an on-screen name that I cannot repeat. these things do happen. And so I had some general thoughts about this just because I helped onboard a coworker recently who was coming home to work just ahead of the pandemic. We, of course, didn't have any idea that 6 months later we would all be working from home. Because I started doing this back in the 2000s, when I had to fight with middle managers about being able to work from home versus going into the office, when I worked for a company that actually made the technology that enabled us to do it, there was still just this mindset. And it seems like a lot of the large tech companies are now sort of coming around. But you know, when I started working from home, there's a lot of drawing boundaries between your work and life and family time. And it can be really hard for some people to not roll out of bed and just start right away into emails and to remember to take a break for lunch or step away from the screen for coffee time. And so that becomes, trying to figure out where those boundaries are. And our security stance needs to have that same kind of vigilance. You know, you need to remember to take a shower every couple of days and put pants on before the Zoom call. So the analogy is you need to remember to fire up the VPN before you get on and do things like that. Making sure that your devices and accounts aren't shared, keeping your smart device, home devices segmented away. I mean, all of this seems like low-hanging fruit, no-brainer, keeping your smart devices not on the same access to the same the corporate resources, but it is a challenge. But I think it's a really good opportunity to for us to improve our overall security stance, because let's face it, we were always working from home. We just weren't doing it, all of the time, the way we are now. Complacency becomes your enemy in that sense. So I think that you can. There's a lot of things that we can do, including upgrading our home network, because home networks are no longer consumer grade anymore. Since you're working from home, you now need an enterprise grade, and it's time to invest in things like that. I think that a lot of companies are looking at how to use things like VPNs and treating home offices like they're the remote offices, and rolling out the same kinds of corporate level enterprise grade products and stances and policies. I think it's just something that's going to end up evolving into that. And if it means that we can segment our IoT stuff away from some of the other things, that makes me even happier.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of organizations I've worked with, they're moving, again, more and more away from passwords and more towards, obviously biometrics and other things, multi-factor. So that this way, obviously most consumer services are continuing using passwords. And so they don't get intermixed in that sense. But Cheever, I want to throw this back to you because a lot of organizations I'm seeing as well, they're trying this thing where they have these secure access workstations where they're basically these laptops are given to employees that, yeah, you might log in with a password, but they have these secure VMs on them that you access company resources with them, either over a VPN or whatnot. Are these still open to attack here with similar issues? Or do you think that that's a better way, even if you're still using a password?
Well, I think the real big issue here is it's always going to be some kid, your son or daughter, plugging in a USB that they found or got from a buddy, and now all of a sudden your laptop's infected. Now, with the base operating system infected, it doesn't matter how good a password you are if there's a keylogger on there. So one of the things that I'm going to throw out there as an idea to a lot of corporations, if you're using a Mac, Bootcamp is not hard to set up. So you have a fresh operating system for your kids to use, even if you're forced to share a laptop with them or a computer with them. Windows has something very similar. Windows 10 has a free copy of Hypervisor on there, so you can actually create a virtual machine for your kids to use. Now, sounds daunting. I understand. I teach college kids how to do this kind of stuff, and they have a tough time wrapping their head around it. Now, one of the easiest things I've ever seen is a little USB stick called Windows to Go. Basically, it has a full copy of Microsoft Windows 10 on it. You boot from it off your laptop, and it's a completely separate Windows. And you can hand it to the kid and say, hey, that's your machine. Don't ever log like into my computer other than that. The other thing, too, like is – go ahead.
I said I like that a lot.
Yeah, Windows to Go was one of those products that was too soon. I haven't heard about it for God knows how long, but it's a great product, especially for the pandemic. And when you buy a Windows to Go USB key, it's actually – you can – I believe different corporations had it on a education pricing, a school project. The other thing, too, is like Intel. Intel's got these really cool little dongles. They actually plug into the HDMI port on your monitor, your TV or whatever, and you use a Bluetooth mouse and keyboard. That's another cool one. Those are relatively inexpensive. They're a full copy of Windows 10. It's actually a discounted copy of Windows 10, no less. And that way your kid can take it with them. So both really good. I really, really, really cringe whenever I hear about someone saying, well, I'm letting my kid do his homework on my laptop and you didn't even have a different login. Cringeworthy to the max.
Right. Well, I think that puts that to bed because I think obviously a lot of organizations know they need to get away from passwords or need to make these things better. So these are some good suggestions. I just hope that they'll start taking some of them. Well, folks, that does it for the Bites. Next up, we have a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. But before we get to that, we have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that is Barracuda. Now, you may have heard of advanced threat protection, especially as part of the current climate. It's something that you want to have for your organization. Now, Barracuda is the provider of cloud-enabled enterprise-grade security solutions that protect emails, networks, data, and applications. Now, Barracuda researchers have seen a steady increase in the number of coronavirus-related spear phishing attacks since January, and they've actually observed a recent spike of 667% in this type of attack since the end of February. Now, with many employees now working remotely, and each one of them getting tons of email every day, they are now vulnerable. They're the targets. 91% of all cyber attacks start in an email. Now, spear phishing, ransomware, account takeover, conversation hijacking, multiply that by how many employees times how many emails. One click on the wrong email can cost you money, customers, or even your organization's reputation. Now, get the protection you need for your company with Barracuda Total Email Protection. It includes all-in-one email security, backup, and archiving, AI-based protection from spear phishing, account takeover, and business email compromise, and automated incident response. Gives you the options to quickly and efficiently address attacks. Now, you also have security awareness training to educate your workforce so your employees can be the first line of defense against any attack. We talked about that. Now, one of Barracuda's premier customers, it's PetSmart, which actually used Barracuda and Microsoft's help to quickly secure the remote business during the pandemic. Now, if you'd like to hear how they did it, check out the Barracuda webinar that's taking place on October 20th, Securing Azure with PetSmart, Microsoft and Barracuda. Visit Barracuda.com/PetSmart to sign up. Now, you'll get expert guidance in overcoming security challenges when migrating your IT infrastructure to a public cloud environment. Sign up today at Barracuda.com/PetSmart. Ensure the safety and security of your business with Barracuda. To uncover the threats hiding in your inbox, get a secure, free email threat scan of your Office 365 account risk-free at Barracuda.com/enterprise. That's Barracuda.com/enterprise. And don't forget to check out Barracuda's webinar on October 20th, Securing Azure with PetSmart, Microsoft, and Barracuda. Go to Barracuda.com/PetSmart. That's Barracuda.com/PetSmart. Barracuda, your journey secured. And we thank Barracuda for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on our Twilight Riot here. And today we have Bruce Esposito. He's a global identity and access management strategist at One Identity. Welcome to the show, Bruce.
Thanks, Lou. Appreciate it.
Now, Bruce, our audience always loves to hear people's origin stories. Can you maybe take us on a short journey through tech and what brought you to One Identity?
Yeah, sure. Back in the early 90s, I was a Finnish carpenter, and I decided early on that this is not what I wanted to do the rest of my life, that I was more suited for an air-conditioned office. And I was always into tech, and I heard about the networking was really interesting to me back in the early 90s. I thought it was a fascinating technology, and there was this company I came across called Novell, and they had this whole certification program. And so I pursued the certified Novell engineer and kind of went down that training course. And the company I took the training from, when I finished the last course, they said, hey, you want to become an instructor? And I was like, yeah, I'm in there. So I worked for them as an instructor for a couple of years. And then Novell actually ended up hiring me. And I worked for Novell for over 20 years. And then from Novell, I kind of went to some other companies. I ended up getting bought out by NetIQ, worked for them for a while. Then that got bought out by Micro Focus. And then I went and worked over at SailPoint, a leading IAM vendor for a while. And then most recently, I started working with One Identity as a strategist.
Fantastic. Now, our audience, obviously, a lot of IT pros out there, and they probably already know the answer to this, but I'd love to get your point of view here. Let's start from the base. This day and age, what is a digital identity?
Yeah. So, I mean, a digital identity is taking the information that makes up who you are and storing it somewhere digitally so you can share it with someone that wants to know that. In reality, we all have hundreds, if not reality, we have thousands of digital identities. We don't know how many we have. Google yourself and you'll scare yourself to death to see how much is out there. But lots of different organizations maintain an identity about you where they got your name and then other information associated with you that they use to interact with you in some way or to track you or to do something nefarious, depending on which organization it is.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like you said, we use a ton of them and sometimes we don't even know. How are people handling this? Are they using it the right way, or should they be using it differently? What's the best process here?
Well, we have no control over it. That is the problem today. Yeah. Is we have to acquiesce to anybody that we want to interact with who requires digital identity. We got to give them whatever they require. Otherwise, we can't interact with them. So we have all these identities all over the place, right? I mean, everything from the government maintains identities on us, from our driver's license, Social Security card, the credit card companies maintain information, and we have an identity with them. And then, of course, every website and organization we interact with. At our companies, we have an identity. We got to sign in to all the different systems. So we have no real way to get control of it. That's the problem we have today is we just got to keep piling on and giving out the information about ourselves and hope somebody doesn't steal it and misuse it right. In some way.
Yeah, I mean, that's a challenge. I think, we have a lot of these identity providers that say, hey, we're trustworthy, use us, secure us. So you have things like, there's Microsoft's identity at AAD, there's Okta, there's, you name them down, there's a whole laundry list of them. And applications obviously integrate depending on, what's the most, easiest for them, whether they want single sign-on or so on and so forth. So exactly. There's so many things out there available. Organizations are just kind of picking and choosing them and they just implement them that way rather than thinking about, well, should I just be unifying and using a single one? Is there a possibility to do that? Is there a way to consolidate these things down to one?
Yeah, now you've just taken me back to 1990, right? That was the promise of identity management in 1990. We're all going to have a master directory, which we're all going to put our stuff in, and it's going to solve the world's problem. I think organizations quickly realized that wasn't going to happen. The closest thing we ever got is Microsoft Active Directory and now Azure AD. That kind of has become a de facto centralized identity for a lot of apps, but not all. So that kind of got thrown out the window from an enterprise perspective. I think enterprises now recognize that they have identities all over the place. Instead, they're trying to find out solutions like identity management to manage those identities from one place to kind of have a single point of view from your identity across all the places from an enterprise. Long term, the interesting stuff that's happening technology wise is what's going on with the idea of a decentralized identity using things like blockchain and creating this idea of a self-sovereign identity. That looks like interesting. I think we're going to see that more probably on the government side first, and then maybe eventually enterprise will take it over once it really becomes established from a government perspective.
Right. Well, you know, I do want to bring my co-host back in, especially Cheebert, because he's worked with identity management for a long time. Cheebert, I want to give you an opportunity here, maybe even to jump on a soapbox. What do you think?
Sure. And first off, Bruce, howdy. We actually used to rub shoulders in Provo. I was one of the first 10 Novell instructors on Earth.
See, way, I knew way, I recognized you from somewhere, Brian. We must have.
Yeah, I also ran an InfoWorld shootout 10, 15 years ago on IAM. And the promise back then was we wanted to have a corporation. We had a scenario where this guy stole some, basically got promoted, show the process, got married, show the process, stole some data, gets wiped out, and then his wife gets changed back to her old identity and so forth. So we had a whole storyline when we were going through. And that was a huge promise, especially when one of the examples was having physical access tied into digital access so that if someone authenticated from Germany for a corporate VPN, but at the same time did a card swipe against the corporate headquarters into a secure area, separately, they're okay. Together, they're a big, giant red flag. We brought that out. Huge article, lots of hits. Everybody loved it, and dead silence. So you already touched on this a little bit on what happened. Do you see some promises? We saw India try a single identity for their population that kind of fizzled.
Yeah.
Are we ever going to see this?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think we're inevitably going to see it. I think it's just naturally going the way. I think COVID's pushing us even quicker towards it. India's was an example of a little bit too fast, too soon. They were the largest digital identity program for their entire country. The problem was they found out that their system still had a risk for fraud. So they had people still stealing and others a digital identity, misusing them, creating fraudulent accounts using that national identity. But even worse than that is they had people that tried to use their digital identity to get government services and were denied because they couldn't validate who they were. The system was failing on them. So you had people that couldn't get resources for food and healthcare because the system was failing. It was a centralized system that they thought would work for everybody. It wasn't failed. If I couldn't prove who I was to the system, I didn't exist in India. So that was a real problem. A lot of people are doing it. The EU is trying to work on a once-only project, a digital identity for all the EU. The United Nations has an agenda, their 2030 agenda, where they're saying that we need to provide an illegal identity for all. It scares me to think that the UN would be the one behind that, but that could be. The U.S. is probably the slowest out of any organization in the worldwide country doing it. I think the closest thing we have to seeing a digital national identity, actually it could be a global identity, is the mobile driver's license initiative is starting. There's an ISO draft standard right now trying to formalize digital driver's licenses. And I think that would be a first step of something that we could use for government services. I could see enterprises leveraging that and being able to use it even in other countries. So that would probably, to me, is my best guess where we might see it here in the U.S.
Actually, the military's got something. They call it a CAC card. I've had a CAC card forever. But that's a stovepipe. That's a custom app. So are we going to see a standard someday, you think?
I think it's inevitable. I don't think we could not have a standard. Yeah, the CAC card's actually been successful, and it's successful because it's a closed system that's very secure and structured within the military, so they can limit and control that very much. To take that and to try to put it out to many, many more organizations, it's a little bit more difficult than that happens. But I think inevitably we see technologies now that are making it viable. The problem in the past has always been around creating digital identities on a national or global scale is who's the one who's the central source for that identity. It went back to the question earlier. The original promises of identity management was we're just going to create one master directory for everything. And we now realize that there's too many problems trying to create a single master database. So how do you take information, make it secure and reliable and shareable, but don't have a single store for it. Well, we see it being done now with cryptocurrency, right, and blockchain. That enables us to have something reliable and trustworthy, yet at the same time, no single entity controls that, to do that. So I think that technology, still in its infancy, could be leveraged for a global type of idea of a national or digital identity.
So is there any hope for things like trusted federation or a federation standard?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think so. We have that today to some thing, and it's a constant moving target. You know, we had SAML, and then obviously you have now OAuth and things like that that are kind of vying for it. It really becomes whatever's commercially available and starts to get used. That kind of becomes a standard for sharing information. So I think we're going to see that from an enterprise level. We'll continue to do that. But again, it's still kind of loose. You still have to create these one-to-one trusted relationships with the federated model today. What we want is to be able to create a federated model which is one-to-many. And again, that's where this idea of being able to use blockchain, being able to have a decentralized way to store information that we can trust and verify is better for federation, things like that, than trying to create one-to-one with each organization we want to try to share information with, particularly like single sign-on information today and things like that.
Great. Well, Bruce, let's get back to that because I do want to talk about that a little bit more. But before we get to that, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that is LastPass. Now, we talked about LastPass before. It really is a great tool. Think about it. Your IT department has a super big job right now, especially you have more devices, more applications. You have a lot of remote workforces out there, all with new threats and regulations making strong security extremely complex. Luckily, LastPass provides your IT with strong security that's easy to use and manage. Now, LastPass has made a commitment to protecting its users for the last 12 years. And now with 25 million users and 70,000 businesses, it's no surprise why they are the award-winning number one password manager out there. Now, living in a remote work environment has greatly impacted identity and access management. We were just talking about it. Now, for business, they are adjusting it to their online workforce, and it hasn't been easy. Lots of logistical problems, and it's also been a bunch of security issues out there. Well, LastPass has been a saving grace to many companies. One in particular leveraged LastPass to enable their team setup and utilize that with strong shared passwords for their accounts and programs. Not only was this a crucial and progressive step towards improved data security, but it also helped ease the burden of the shift to working from home full time. Now, if you haven't used them yet, now is the time for your business to get LastPass. They help you transition your remote workforce very easily. They have single sign-on, which manages employees' access into centralized views, so IT can always have insights into who has access to what from where. Plus, they have enterprise password management, which ensures oversight of shadow IT enforceable policies across all password-protected accounts. Plus, they have MFA that requires additional factors to prove the user's identity, while the use of biometric and contextual factors make the process much smoother for your employees. Now, there is zero knowledge security model protects everyone from the actual individual user to the biggest organization that uses LastPass. Your security is their top priority. They allow employees to go passwordless and access the tools they need to do their work without any impedance. Now, LastPass uses AES 256-bit encryption with PBK DF2 SHA-256 and salted hashes to ensure complete security in the cloud. Data is encrypted and decrypted at the device level, so the data in your vault is secret from everyone, including LastPass. Now, people have their favorite tool that saves them time and money. That one is definitely LastPass for me. I love it. I use it so often, I don't even know I'm using it anymore. Think about it. You have a username and password for every site you go to. It's your important sites, your financial sites, your business sites, your social networks, you name it. It's hard to remember all those. That's why LastPass saves us with the autofill feature and that unique password generation capability. I use it with Active Directory, so I only have to remember my login for Active Directory, especially if I'm not even using passwords to do that, and it lets me access all my other passwords. No wonder LastPass has won 8 awards so far this year. They are PC Mag's Editor's Choice. They won the Fortress Cybersecurity Award, and they are Business Insider's Best Overall Password Manager, just to name a few. You don't have to take my word for it. LastPass speaks for itself. There's no better time to get LastPass. Ease the burden for yourself and your remote workforce with the cybersecurity protection you need. Go to LastPass.com/twit. That is LastPass.com/twit. And we thank LastPass for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Bruce Esposito. He's the Global Identity and Access Management Strategist at One Identity. We were talking a little about potential, the potential for a single identity provider. Well, not necessarily a single identity. It's more of maybe blowing it up to maybe a decentralized way, using blockchain to store that information. How would something like that be implemented? How would organizations go to start using it, for one? And for two, how would that even be implemented? How would they be able to trust it?
So actually, before I answer that, I want to tell you, I'm a huge LastPass customer. I love LastPass, and I can tell you I'm a Big Mac user. I've used all the other password managers for a year. They all were buggy, never worked, and I stumbled across LastPass. It's the only one that's ever worked for me. So I don't get paid to say that, but I can tell you I love LastPass too. Now, that being said, we'll get back to our topic. So I think there's several things that have to happen to do this idea of a single decentralized identity. There's a couple things that are kind of in the work. There's this idea of contextual integrity and the self-sovereign identities. And those kind of things go together to kind of provide the basis for being able to do what we want to do. The idea of contextual integrity is we need to have a system where I only have to provide the minimal information to the requester. We got to get away from this attitude that we have to give all the information possible to anybody who ever wants it. And they're just going to keep it stored for us, and we're going to trust that they're going to be good for it. And so we create all these regulations like HIPAA and GDPR, and all those things are going to protect us. How? It's not. All it's going to do is penalize the person if they make a mistake. It doesn't protect anything. So the idea of contextual integrity is we get to a system to where I can use the idea of zero knowledge proofs and only providing information. So if I had to go, I'm at a restaurant or a liquor store and I need to buy something, I need to prove I'm over 21. Well, today I got to give them my driver's license and I got to show them my birthday. Then they got to go calculate and figure out if I'm over 21. That's crazy. I should even have to do that. Instead, what I need to be able to do is to have a digital flag, if you will, set that says I'm over 21. That's verified by a trustworthy source, the state driving agency who's validated my age, looking at my birth certificate. So then I present that digital thing saying I'm over 21, and they have the ability to look at it and say, yep, Maryland shows that it's signed off, he's 21, then I know he's 21. And they never have to know my birthday. So that's where we limit what we share only with who needs it and exactly what they need, and not just giving it all out. I think that's the first step.
Right.
The other one is the idea of a self-sovereign identity, and that gets to where you as a person control your identity. You determine when it's shared, when that information is withheld, and then probably most importantly, when it's forgotten. So that you can literally share something with somebody, but you have a flag that has the ability to say, no, that organization should forget it or delete it, and the system's in place to be able to provide that. And so your identity becomes yours. It's independent. So even if you use it at an enterprise, I'm working at one company today and I move to another one tomorrow, my identity stays with me and could be moved no matter where I went because I control that identity without giving it up. So that's kind of the basics to do that. Now is how you implement that. And that's where it gets into the model of you have owners, issuers, and verifiers. You have a digital identity. That's what I own. That's my information about me, and it grows all the time. The different things people want to know. I have to have a place to store it, and that's the idea of a digital wallet. It has to be something trustworthy where I can keep it secure myself. And then I have information in that wallet that gets verified by trustworthy sources that are digitally signed by government agencies or banks or whatever it is, depending on the piece of data that I have. And so that becomes the framework of something that I have with me. And when different organizations want it, I can choose digitally to share a piece of it, and they can validate if that information I'm sharing with them is correct or not. And it stays with me all the time. It's not something that has to just go in one big source and somebody has to go ask somebody else the information. So that's the basic idea of creating a single identity that could stay with you instead of something that's always owned by somebody else.
Right. Well, Hubert, I want to bring you back in because you have experience on the flip side, which is a centralized identity with some, you know, an organization trying to build a centralized identity system, right?
Well,
absolutely. Of course. Yeah, Brian. Yep. Go ahead, Brian.
In this case, this is actually a story. I can't name names. It was with a bunch of federal agencies and people in that agency that were very high up. And the concept was, have the digital identities issued by the Social Security Administration as an augmentation to the Social Security number. But the local authentication, the local validations would be handled by the U.S. Postal Service. This was all pie in the sky. It was a conversation over drinks, well, drinks and cigars. But what do you think? Is this such a huge pie in the sky that'll never happen? Or are we starting to see it maybe not in the U.S., but maybe in places like the U.K. and other places?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where we are seeing it. I think smaller countries are doing it, and generally a lot of these countries, U.S. likes to think of itself, we're the leader in everything, and some things we are. But when technology comes, a lot of the other countries in the world, in Europe and even in other countries, are beating us when it comes to just IT and technology stuff, what they're implementing. So we're seeing it already, like I said, over in the EU, big time. They're already leveraging digital identities. But it's also easy. You got to recognize they're dealing with a country the size of a state a lot of times in the United States. So it's a smaller population, and they have better control to implement that on a scale. So there's no doubt that we're moving towards that idea of being these digital identities. But I think you're right. I think we're a little ways away of having the promise of a self-sovereign identity, something I have on my own that I control forever. I think initially what we're going to see is a digital identity with the government that is trustworthy and reliable and portable. I think that's where it will start and then probably leverage out from there.
I sort of want to pivot for a second, Bruce. This is we've been talking throughout this episode about how things have changed with everybody working from home. We're living in the during and eventually the post-COVID-19 world. And so I sort of want to put a human face on the enterprise technology that we're talking about. I noticed that you guys, in doing my due diligence and research for this episode, I went out to your website, and like many companies, you guys are going to have a conference next month that's going to be virtual. And you are actually running, and I've attended a bunch of conferences, I've participated in a bunch this year, and everybody's doing it a little bit differently. At least part of yours is going to be live because you've set it up so that it's going to have two different time zones for one for the U.S. and one more for the European audience. And because I've participated in so many conferences this year, and I was in a boot camp a couple of weeks ago where some of my classmates were in Singapore, I want to ask you about just in general, virtual jet lag. So these guys that are running this conference for you, you're obviously doing it in different time zones to accommodate everybody. But more and more, just our normal workday involves not necessarily our workday involves. We were supposed to get on a plane and be in Poland next week, but now we're going to have the conference virtually. So it's going to be at 2:30 in the morning. How? Just in general, I want anybody to answer this one. This is becoming, I mean, from what I can see over the last couple of months, this is becoming more and more normalized. How do we deal with this, and how can technology that is out there help us deal with this, what may be a new norm?
Well, I think that's a good question. I to be honest with you, in some ways, I would rather be at my home and have to get up at 2:30 in the morning to do a presentation or something than to travel somewhere and have the red eye and be in a hotel room and try to get myself adjusted to the time change and all that. So in some ways, I mean, yeah, we're doing a lot more of that. But in other ways, I find it easier than travel. What I've gotten worn out on is I'm so tired of Zoom and WebEx and Teams, and I'm just tired of the virtual stuff. And thanks for mentioning that. We're having our Unite conference, and one of the things we're changing this year, it's virtual Unite. So our customers won't have to go to a one place, you know, Phoenix or whatever, although they may miss that. They could do it remotely. But we are going to do part of the conference in California with a big stage and all that, because I've been on a bunch of conferences this year, and they're great that they're virtual and we're still having them, but I'm tired of just watching people in their home offices like now. It gets kind of boring. And so I think what we're trying to do with our conference is why we're going to have some of the traditional virtual kind of one-on-one type things. We're also going to have some live things with a live stage and the interaction and feeling like you're at a larger conference in that environment to do that. But to your point, the hard part's going to be is I'm going to have to get up early in the morning and do a couple of those for the different time zones and just have to put up with it.
I think I completely agree with you about I would rather do it from home than have to make do all of the travel, especially because 1 week I had to be in Poland, if you will, and then the next week I needed to be in Asia. And it was a lot easier not having to physically travel there to make those changes. What I find most difficult is not having the sunlight as my guide to help me. And so I have invested in an alarm clock that has natural sunlight so that you can actually turn it on and get what is artificially natural sunlight. It's an alarmingly expensive clock that has this thing on there, but that's the one technology thing that I think has been most helpful. Thank you very much.
So I always thought those were gimmicks. Now I've just got to go on Amazon and search for one of those things because they sound useful.
Me too. I'm going there too right now. Great suggestion, Mo. Bruce, thanks so much for being here. We're running a little bit low on time. I did want to maybe give you a chance to tell the folks at home where they can learn more about One Identity, maybe a little bit more about that conference as well.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for the opportunity. OneIdentity.com. You can go from there. We have right on our homepage, you'll be able to find information on how to sign up for our Unite conference and be able to see some of the technologies we do. We talked a lot about this idea of universal identities or whatever, but you know that's way away from enterprises. Enterprises today have to do one thing, which is how do I take all these different identities in my internal enterprise and manage them from one place? And really, that's what One Identity is all about, is how do you take all the different systems you have today and manage them from one place, govern and secure them in one place to do that. And that's really the key thing we do, which is today the real problem to solve for enterprises. So they can learn about that going to our website, and all that information we'll provide them that they want to look at.
Well, thanks so much for being here. Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the Best Dang Enterprise podcast in the universe. So tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes the show possible, especially to my co-host, starting with our very own geek in paradise, Mr. Brian Chee. Cheebert, what's going on for you in the coming weeks, and where can people find you online?
I am ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab on Twitter, or I'm Cheebert at twit.tv. But you know what? Why don't you use Twyatt at twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. Now, Mo, one of the things that I've done that's a lot cheaper than that Nightlight is the Philips Hue system. I can dial in Savannah Sunset, or I can dial in Reed. There's lots of different profiles, and my Amazon Echo can control it. So I actually just say, blah, blah, good morning, and it reads me the local weather and slowly ramps up the light. Great way to wake up.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, speaking of Mo, we have to thank her. Of course, she's the queen of Wi-Fi, and she's our Texan. She's our Texan. I love it. I love the barbecue down there. Mo, what's coming up for you for the coming week, and where can people find you?
Well, first, I have to say, Cheebert is my absolute favorite life hacker. I get the best tips from him on absolutely everything. I have, for better or worse, been incredibly busy with ITDRC. In fact, I wore my ITDRC t-shirt today just to remind, and I was so happy that Cheebert did that story about the Ho tribe, because that was actually originally an ITDRC deployment that went out. And yes, they were Ruckus APs that we had donated, but it's ITDRC's IT Disaster Resource Center. We go in after 24 hours after a natural disaster, or year round, if for in cases of the pandemic or the whatever the next apocalypse is, and we go into communities and we help solve communications problems. We reestablish communications and reconnect those communities. And so we've been doing setting up testing centers, mobile testing centers, mobile hospitals, and homework hotspots. Of course, as the kids have come home to school, gone back to school, and in some cases, my local county just had to shut down our entire ISD for 2 weeks. So as we're trying to help solve the broadband equity problem and get people connectivity in the places where they need it, ITDRC has been just really hopping. And so I'm so happy to be an ambassador for them and help connect them with places like Starlink.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks again for being here. Well, folks, we have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to watch and listen to our show to get your enterprise and IT news goodness. We want to make it easy for you to watch and listen and catch up on your news, your IT news. Go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twiat. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes, the show notes, the co-hosts, guest information, of course, all the links of the stories we do during the show. But more importantly, next to those videos, you got those helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio or your video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your devices or any one of your podcatcher applications. Subscribe. It's really the best way to stay on top of your enterprise and IT news. Plus, it's the best way to support our show. Plus, of course, after you subscribe, you can impress your friends, your family, your coworkers with the gift of Twiat, because we talk about a lot of fun subjects, the tech subjects on the show, and I guarantee they will find it interesting as well. So definitely share it with them. If you have already subscribed and you're available during the Fridays, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, we do this show live. live.twit.tv. There you can see, come see how the pizza's made, come see behind the scenes, all the great fun stuff that we do here on Twit. But if you're going to watch the show live, you might as well jump into our chat room live as well. That's irc.twit.tv. There you can see all the great characters in there, some great conversations and some great questions that come from there. So we would love to have you there. If you can watch the show live, you might as well jump in there as well. irc.twit.tv. Of course, if you can't watch the show live and you can't be in the chat room, that's okay. You can still be part of the conversation. You can still be part of the Twit community at twit.community. Great website out there. Great way to stay as part of the community and the conversation. All the show content's out there, the host. Sometimes the guests go out there and do some conversations. We have a lot of great tech conversations. So definitely jump out there and be part of it 24/7 at twit.community. Remember, you can always follow me, twitter.com/LouMM. There I post all my enterprise tidbits. Of course, I have great conversations with people like you as well. And sometimes I post a little bit about my normal work week at Microsoft. And there I post a little bit about how Office can make and be more productive for you by customizing it, by using the Office platform. You can go to developers.microsoft/office and find really great ways to customize your Office experience and make it better for you. Now, I also want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week. We couldn't do this show without them. So thank you again for all their support every week. And also thank you to all the engineers and staff at Twit. Of course, I want to thank Mr. Brian Chiebert one more time. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer as well. He does all the show bookings. He does all the plannings for the show. And we really couldn't do the show without him. So thank you again, Chiebert, for all your support each and every week. And before we sign out, we have to thank our editors for today that are behind the scenes that really make us look good. And of course, our TD for today, John Jammer B. Jammer B, how's everything going over there at Twit Studios?
I can tell you things are smoking, and it's in a good way. Got the text that Leo got a 16-pound brisket that's been cooking overnight, and on my way home, there may be a pound or two for me.
See, the disadvantages of living so far away from Leo's smoker. Well, fantastic. Thanks, Jammer B, for being here. And until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep Twiat.
Hey, I'm Jason Howell, host of Hands on Android. Every week, I take a look at the Android operating system and the phone that you have in your hands to tell you how to use it better. Is it tips? Is it tricks? Is it little known secrets, experiments, even emails from fans of the show? You name it, we talk about it on Hands on Android. You can subscribe by going to twit.tv/HOA and make sure that you do that so you don't miss a single episode. We'll see you there.